Good morning, good people. I'm Kiplin Primus, your host for The Local Take on Jazz 91.9 WCLK. And this morning, we're turning the focus to politics. We are joined in the studio by Dr. William Boone, our go-to political expert. Dr. Boone, welcome.
Thank you. My pleasure.
And we're also joined this morning by Yolanda Lattimore, a social media guru and person to talk about kind of the general malaise that's over everything politics these days. Yolanda, welcome.
Thank you.
You know, I when Yolanda and I were talking about this, I thought it was appropriate because, honest and truthfully, after the whole Russian bot Facebook fiasco, right, I really kind of assumed people were going to be leaving Facebook. And that really didn't happen. So what do you, how is social media still driving, you know, the political narrative?
Well, I mean, we always talk about no press is bad press. That was the perfect marketing opportunity for Mark Zuckerberg. Okay, because what he was essentially saying is the information that the Russians were able to obtain, your company, your brand, you know, whoever's the mastermind where you are can come to Facebook and get that same data. He was saying that to businesses, you can get that same data. So it was a marketing opportunity. Watching him through the congressional hearing, I was like, you can't pay for this. That was absolutely amazing. If every CEO didn't sit and watch that and figure out that they have that power too, because that's what it was about. So no, I think they probably gained Facebook users, if anything.
But we're still learning that the bots are out there. There's mm-hmm. some false hashtag now about leaving the Democratic Party mm-hmm. that was started by the Russians. Mm-hmm. It hasn't caught on. It's harder to fool Democrats than Republicans. Some people seem to think. I really don't know. But it didn't catch on the way some of the...
Is it harder to fool them or are there less Democrats attuned to social media? I'm just saying. You know, because I mean, it's catch. I've seen a few key people talking about it, and that's really how it catches on. That's really how it goes viral. Once you get an influencer talking about it, whether they're talking in the negative or positive, once they start talking about it, then it'll catch on. We have to learn to wait 3 days, okay? So wait till probably Tuesday, and everybody will be talking about it through the weekend, and then the Sunday news. You know, it'll
and
be
then all
there.
Of a sudden, I'm yeah. leaving the Democratic Party.
It'll be right,
a viral.
Right.
Russian bot success story.
And bots have been around forever. And let me just tell you how Mark Zuckerberg discovered them. He went to the tech junkyard. So we have to give a little bit of tech history, okay? There was a website, if you remember years ago, there was a website where people thought they were having affairs, right? That website, when that website went down and abandoned the technology, Mark Zuckerberg went right to the tech junkyard, picked it up and applied it to Facebook. So that's what we have going on here. So you should be concerned. And you see me telling people, you know, be careful of the new friend requests because they may not be real. But you're telling these people, you're getting catfish. Okay, you're telling these people everything they need to know about you. So just be careful.
And everyone who's posting their social media memes, mm-hmm. still no one's voting, Dr. Boone. I mean, everyone is so active. They're angry. They've got, you know, rants. They've got hashtags. They've got articles to back it up. But we know in the last election that mattered in Atlanta, in the mayor's election, only 20% of eligible voters mm-hmm. voted. And that was after the election of our current president.
Yeah, well, actually, that's not surprising, quite frankly, because voting has never been that big a thing in the country. Let me tell you why. I mean, voting certainly is the kind of thing that people talk about all the time. You must vote or you don't count. But in actual fact, Americans have become rather complacent with the government they have. So the idea of voting and attaching a consistent and a rather large vote to a result has yet to settle in on most Americans' minds. They really don't make that connection. Now, in this 2016 election, maybe after about 2 or 3 years now, you will find out there is a connection. Voting does have some consequences. But I think, too, that there is a kind of misconception about voting in this country, especially as it relates to an American president. Everyone knows that Donald Trump lost the popular vote by 3.5 million plus votes, right? So, but the narrative has changed, and folk tend to believe that he won the vote. in the sense that he can carry out the policies that he's now pursuing. These policies were rejected by the majority of American voters. So the connection between voting and not voting is rather tenuous in this country. And there used to be a kind of discussion in political science among some folk, not me, that because people did not vote in large numbers, the apology was, look, that means they're satisfied with the government. Not at all. Not at all. Just the inverse is probably the case. They're dissatisfied with the government because government is not delivering in the way they think it should. Yeah.
I really can't quite understand it. I know in Atlanta, the midterm elections, hardly anyone shows up to vote. But these are the elections that even matter more. In this current runoff, we've got a runoff coming up. Final day to vote is July 24th. Early voting has already started. I think only 2,200 people have voted in DeKalb County. Democrats are saying, well, we don't have anyone to vote for because our choice for governor is settled. Mm-hmm. But there's state education superintendents, their judges, mm-hmm. their runoffs almost in every district. And people seem just that they don't know. Is it that, you know, judges don't usually advertise or the education superintendent isn't on television? Right. Or
and they don't need to be. That's always been my thing. Please make sure you get to the end of your ballot. That's the one thing that I promoted. I figured if I promote getting to the end of the ballot, they'll at least get to the first page. But the judges we hear don't run. They have no opposition because you don't want to lose against a judge and then have to go and fight cases before that judge. That's real, right? But let me talk about this. Coming in here today, I just closed 43 sessions on my phone, 43 apps I had open that God, my life, 43, I'm counting, like trying to close my phone. I can direct every aspect of my life on my phone, but I can't vote. I still have to go to a polling place, which conveniently is in walking distance from where I live. Most polling places are. I have to be authenticated with my license. I have to hand it to somebody that's been in the polling place for 20 years, okay? I have to pick up a lead pencil, fill out a piece of paper, which I no longer can see because I have to put on my glasses to do that. Then, you know, you go through this process. Somebody hands me a card that I put into a computer, right? And essentially, why can't I be, and I can be authenticated to get my license and all these things on my phone. Why am I still having to go to a polling place to vote? Why are we saying use of this technology?
Well, that's not the case all across the country.
Because
in Washington State, you can mail it in.
They have higher participation.
Okay, so you mail it in through the U.S. mail.
Or you can go through the computer in some states.
We need to get that.
What you're talking about is innovations that have been talked about, innovations that are being tried all across the country.
Is it fear?
No, it's not here.
I mean, fear. Is it fear that's fighting it?
Fear resides with certain generations. Mm. I mean, if indeed you've been voting for 50 years mm-hmm. and you've been voting by paper ballot, then that's what you trust.
Okay.
That's what you trust. Because the whole question about voting and whether or not your vote counts, it comes down to a matter of trust. And so if you talk to people about using the internet about voting mm-hmm. or even using U.S. mail about voting, do they feel enough confidence there to participate in that? That's what you have to build trust in. Take this whole present system now where you go in and you punch the little machine that you were just describing.
Right.
In this state and several other states, quite a few states as a matter of fact, there is no paper trail as to where I voted and what I voted. As a matter of fact, a recount is a rather bogus kind of thing because a recount only counts the numbers that the machine spewed out the first time out.
Right.
It does not have a paper trail that said that Boone voted for A, B, and C. Mm-hmm. Nothing is there. But you have to convince people and have people have confidence in the machine, in the process itself. And you're right. It is very difficult. But as it was just noted, in states where you do have the technology being put into play, there is a higher participation of folk voting.
In Washington State, where all of the elections are done by mail, they have the highest participation rate, I think, in the country. I know at one time that they did. But it's because your ballot comes in the mail. You open it.
You get to review it.
You fill it out. You can Google information and find out exactly what you're voting for.
Yes.
You put it back in a self-addressed stamped envelope and drop it in the mailbox. I mean, we could
make to advocate for that.
We could make it easier across the country. But, you know, for the United States to be a democracy, and a democracy depends on the citizen's voice, we do not make voting easy.
Well, actually, that's deliberate. That is very deliberate.
That's what I was going to say. It's got to be deliberate.
It is very deliberate. The history of this country is to exclude people from voting and participation. There's no doubt about it. From the very beginning, if you look at let's take this last election for president. The Electoral College was designed primarily in 1787 so that a small number of minority white males could maintain control of the country. That's the primary purpose of it, because you select the electors by state legislative bodies, which are made up of small identifiable people in that particular century. And so what you get is a system that perpetuates that there are certain folk who ought not vote. If you don't own property, you cannot vote, right? If you're not a white male, you cannot vote. If you're under the age of 21, you cannot vote. All of these have been excluded. If you've ever been convicted of a crime, you cannot vote. All of these. So there's never been a history in this country of including people or trying to find ways to include. So you're absolutely right. So it's just more than just the kind of technology or the process that we use. It's the basic mentality of anti-inclusion in terms of voting.
So we're not in a new paradigm.
Oh, no.
But then connect for me. And that being said, connect for me why we always end up talking about or deep diving and watching and under the microscope as black voters, and particularly black women voters.
Well, you look at, actually, black women voted, and this is interesting, African-American women, in terms of numbers, participate at greater rates than any other constituent group in the country. And that we can show. And there have been studies or attempts at looking at why is that the case. Why is it that black African-American women vote more than anyone else? Why do they feel they have more at stake in voting than anyone else? So those are the kind of questions we need to raise, and we're trying to get at that in terms of why do they vote? Black males don't vote. In fact, African-American males among their group are one of the lowest participating groups of all. White males vote, white women vote. But African-American women outstrip their numbers in terms of percentage of voting because they have more at stake than anyone else they see.
When do we take over?
well, actually, you are. If you look at the ballots across the country now, there are more women, and in particular, there are more women of color, both African-American women and Latino women, offering for office to push this thing forward. Mm-hmm. So there is the greatest awareness among women in terms of what is needed. And they understand that a ballot, a vote, is just one tool that you use in order to get what you want.
Right.
That's all that does. You don't look at voting as the alpha and the omega of the thing. It's just the beginning. It's just one of the tools that you
and
use.
And I think that's the other thing that citizens forget. If they do vote, you still have to pay attention. You still have to engage with those people who are supposed to represent you, even if it's just responding to the email newsletter. Mm-hmm. You know, you have to make sure that your voice is heard.
Yeah, democracy is not easy. A Republican form of government is not easy. It takes work on the part of the citizens to keep people's toes to the fire. I mean, for instance, you get Trump running across the world as if he was the king of the world. Mm-hmm. I shouldn't have said that, but I mean, and the kind of behavior and the kind of, but more importantly than his behavior are the kinds of policies that he is pushing, both domestically and internationally. Those things have impacts on folk lives every day. That's what you're talking about here. I mean, you think trade is that far from you? Not really. It has a great impact on what kind of job you get, what kind of pay you get, and what makes you get a job at all.
And for so long, the Republican Party were the champions of free trade. NAFTA is a Reagan policy that Clinton passed. I mean, the Republicans have convinced me that free trade is a wonderful thing. So it is so, you know, amazing to be in this time where our soybean farmers are praying that, I guess, Russia and North Korea are going to take the place of China.
Yeah, well, that's their hope, but not necessarily what the outcome may be. I mean, it could well be that go other sources. But one of the things is clear. One thing is very clear, that you are in a situation of globalization. There's no doubt about that. And whether or not this new thrust by Trump and his cohorts can staunch that is very problematic, because there are other forces at work to maintain this. In any kind of trade, someone gets hurt. There's no doubt about it. Some people profit and some people do not. It's a matter of how you balance that off. Now, I'm not going to speak to trade, but it matters how you balance that off. But some people get hurt. In this whole business of globalization, apparently a whole swath of people got hurt, especially for people in this country, low-income white folk, some middle-income white folk felt they were left out. But see, Republican Party in its old ethos, in its old configuration, as you indicated, were free traders. They really didn't care about that. I mean, the idea was that certain multinationals and national companies were benefiting from this trade, reduction in terms of their overhead costs and more profits from overseas.
Goods were cheaper.
Right. Their beef with China is less to do with the trade imbalance and more to do with the fact that China has this policy of saying, if you come to our country, you must give up something like your
intellectual
property, right?
Right. That's the first thing you hear.
Yeah, right. Mm-hmm. So it's more of that than anything about the trade imbalance. These companies will care less about the trade imbalance because they can profit from that. They care about, look, you're going to steal my intellectual property, and that's where my money may lie, and you may take that and then boot me out and reduce me to a minority owner in my own company. Mm-hmm.
So I'm going to swing this back around home. All Republicans know that they have to vote in this primary because of their gubernatorial candidate. Mm-hmm. Stacey Abrams is the Democratic standard bearer. Is Georgia ready for an African-American woman to be governor? I mean, she is smart. She's got plans. She's been working since 2012. She's been to every county. Or is it going to come down to who has the biggest gun?
Well, that's a good way of putting that in terms of that, because if you look on the, let's start with on the Republican side, you have these people at the lieutenant governor level, at the gubernatorial level, at the state superintendent level, all attempting to run as far to the right wing as they can get. They're trying to be the right of the right. And if you notice that, everybody's trying that. I mean, there is no middle ground for these guys.
No center?
No center, right? Mm-hmm. You're right. I mean, if you do not swear allegiance to Trump, then you're considered to be a traitor to the Georgia Republican Party. Now, whether or not the state is ready, that's a very good question. I think, as a political scientist, I don't make too many predictions. but for me, it seems that looking at the way Georgia politics and the demographics of the state are changing, it may be one or two more elections away from a real contender from African American to be female or male for the governorship. But that's not to say she could not win. Because one of the things I think that sometimes is overlooked, if a African-American candidate can get to South Georgia and latch on to an issue and begin to minimize, quite frankly, this may be heresy to some folk, minimize the whole race concept and say, look, you people in North and South Georgia, you can't even get to a hospital. You'll probably die because it'll take you an hour and a half from your house to get to the nearest hospital. If you're a woman and you're pregnant, you're in labor, you may lose your baby. Also, you people down here are starving, you know, because you don't have any food. And also in the hospital piece that you do not expand, you're going bankrupt, you know.
But we're also talking about the people who vote against their interest, so you can't appeal to them on their interest.
Well, no, you can't, but I'm saying you have to try to break through that.
I
agree with you. People seldom vote what appears to be their objective interest. But you have to try to break through that, because if you don't, then an African-American woman candidate would be hard to relate to a North Georgia woman or male, it seems to me. Mm-hmm. But it's not impossible. It's not impossible. I mean, at the moment, Republicans hold every statewide constitutional office, right? Mm-hmm. And if I'm not mistaken, they're all males at the moment, right? Mm-hmm. So you're right, but I agree. You know, yeah, certainly. People vote against their interests consistently.
Right. And you say that, and when we talk about Georgia, governorship is one election that we have given up, just given up each and every time. Mm-hmm. And interesting that you said something that people often said about Obama. It's like, you know, while he's visible, we may be a couple of terms away from mm-hmm. actually having, and yet he got in. And I'm watching this campaign. I'm watching this campaign, and even though people are going as far right as they can, I think they are counting on us to vote. And in fact, I've heard in circles, people are expecting this to turn out. Now, we're concerned because something as galvanized as this is has not gotten us to turn out. So that's going to be, I think, the deciding factor.
I think your point is well taken, because I mentioned, I didn't get to it, but the mm-hmm. demographics of the state are changing rapidly.
Mm-hmm.
The state is no longer the southern state that many people were born into.
Exactly.
And the in-migration is not necessarily from other southern states.
It's from the north.
It's mm-hmm. from the northeast, some extent
California,
from California,
even.
From the west. Mm-hmm. So you're getting a very different mix of people. You can see that, especially in the metro Atlanta area, but it's also invading other parts of Georgia as well.
Yes.
So that demographic mix is right. That's why I say it's always problematic. In terms that we may be closer than we think,
mm-hmm.
be closer than we think, and it could be the turnout, because if the Democrats under Stacey Abrams' push here can appeal to a certain stripe of independent white voters who have come mm-hmm. to the state,
mm-hmm.
of vote people who have no allegiance to the Confederacy, if she can come to that deal with that. She has the smarts to do that.
Yes.
And then she has the presence to do that. I mean, when one talks about the kind of presence a candidate makes,
right.
She has that kind of presence. So it's possible. But and I think she can put up a good race, probably a better race than Carter put up.
Mm.
Yeah.
I think we'll see. Of course, you know, time will tell. And the other thing is the general malaise. I mean, I was mentioning to you earlier, one of the first posts I saw on Facebook this morning, you know, I can't take 45. He's on the television. He's talking. It's so embarrassing.
Right.
You know, some people, I went to BBC World News, and now, of course, they lead with Trump's tweets, too. So it's hard to escape the Trumpdom of this administration. I mean, right. We all kind of know this emperor has no clothes on, but he is very loud. And
he's everywhere. He's everywhere. And the thing of it is, start concentrating on 46. Okay, if you're that upset, if you feel that bad, start putting your energy on 46. Because I mean, we're 2 years in. Okay, we're not yet destroyed. Okay. I'm really concerned about 2019. We focus a lot on 2020. I'm really concerned about what needs to happen in 2019 for us to have the 2020 that we need. So when I see that, and I see it on my timeline all the time, you see I'm trying to put out some antidotes. But let's start working on 46. You know, if I say 46, who instantly comes to mind? What generation comes to mind? We should have that. We're 2 years out. You know, we should have that. So let's focus on 46.
Yeah, you're right. You're absolutely right. I think 19 is very important. 19 will probably be something of a bellwether for us in terms of whether or not the Democrats can pull themselves together.
Mm.
Because although the emphasis seems to be on the Republicans, Democrats are still a bit apart.
Mm-hmm.
I mean,
mm-hmm.
and
there's no consistent message.
Right. That's the problem. And up in New York, you know, you got the throwing out of Crowley.
Mm-hmm.
Even here in Georgia, some old time, long time Democrats in the state legislative body were bounced.
Quite frankly, seats. I think everyone born before 1960 needs to take a seat. It's time.
I wouldn't say take a seat, just start working together. Yeah, just start working together.
It's time for you to start bringing someone in. Be a kingmaker. Bring in a successor.
Right.
I'm not saying take a seat and no longer work.
Right.
But don't be in the front of the mic so much anymore.
That's just me.
Don't
stand there alone. You know, recognize, like I said, you know, we've got so many generations behind that age that are trying to, you know, we don't want them to have to think that they have to go out and reinvent the wheel. And we see that far too often, that next generation thinking they got to start from scratch, you know. Hopefully we can use social media to kind of bridge some of this, you know, advocacy, I guess.
Well, I'm kind of hopeful because I see a good many folk who were born after 1960, 1996, whatever, who are out there really doing things. I really do. In fact, especially in those who run for elected office, they're out there, they're really working hard. And you see the results of that, like I mentioned New York earlier, and into some parts in this state as well, and at the local level. So there, I mean, I'm very hopeful. I mean, I'm not discouraged at all.
There were some significant wins. We didn't even have a chance to celebrate those wins.
Yeah, because our president tweeted something. But I want to thank you all so much for coming and talking politics today. And I want to encourage everyone, please go vote. Go to the end of the ballot.
End of the ballot.
And everyone should be voting on July 24th. Everyone should be voting.
Who knew?
Democrat, Republican, men, women, independent. Right. If you're old enough,
center,
go vote. Right. Thank you all so much.